Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
A very good morning to you and welcome to the installment of Beyond Governance here at 101.9 High FM. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I am delighted to share the space and time with you as we continue to share insights from the perspective of our esteemed guest tonight. This morning, having yet another fascinating that I will soon introduce, and I'm certainly looking forward to our conversation. In this morning, we are putting a spotlight on the role of the teacher union. As you might be aware, there's probably about five or so teacher unions that are playing a critical role in education system, as it were. This morning, I am joined by Mr. Dolopi, Boson of Dolopi, who is the Deputy General Secretary at SATU. Without any waste of time, let me take this opportunity to welcome Mr. Dolopi. Good morning, sir, and welcome to Beyond Governance.
Good morning, Nimrod, and good morning to your listeners, and thanks for having us.
The pleasure is ours indeed. Without any waste of time, Mr. Dolopi, we have indicated that we have got about five or so unions, and I would imagine SATU is probably the largest union representing a number of teachers in the country. Is that assumption still correct?
Yes, I think you are correct. We are still the biggest union in the country.
All right, no, there's enough. We've got about 22,000 schools or so, and obviously that's quite massive, and we've got thousands of teachers. What would you say what is your overall view of the quality of teaching and learning in this country more broadly? Before getting to nitty-gritties, what is your overall view of quality of teaching in this country?
Look, I think we have progressed in terms of addressing the quality of teaching at our schools. And that is informed by firstly improving the qualifications of teachers at our schools. You'll remember, maybe if I just give a background, to say that there was a time in our country where we were employing even up to under and unqualified teachers. So I think we have passed that stage to a point that now in our system, all teachers who are employed are qualified teachers, meet the minimum requirements. We have gone to university, obtained a B.Ed, a degree. So to that extent, I think we have moved a little to address the question of quality teaching, because now you have a qualified person instead of having somebody with a matric certificate, as the case was before, and or with somebody who does not have the full qualification. We have at least been able to move to that extent. But also the question of resourcing at our schools have also improved a little. So now our schools, at least most of the teachers have, or most of the schools have learning and teaching support material. So that has also improved in terms of the quality of the teachers. It's not ideal. It's not where we want to be. But at least we think that the needle has moved a little. We still think that there's more to be done to realize the real improvement in terms of the quality of education. If you use, for instance, the matric results as just an indicator, you'll come to realize that in terms of quality passes of the matric students, over the years, we have seen some real improvement in terms of learners who are achieving bachelor's certificates at matric. So to me, that's an indication that we have seen some improvement in terms of the quality of teaching. Like I'm saying, it's not ideal because still we do have reports that are coming out both nationally and internationally that shows that our children are lagging behind, more especially around reading and so on and so forth. But I think something has been or is being done to address those challenges. So yes, indeed, over the years up to now, since 1994, we have seen some marked improvement in terms of the teaching and how teachers are performing in the classes, yes.
I'm glad that you've raised the issue of underqualified teachers as well as issues pertaining to resources, which are obviously a catalyst in any learning environment. And the issue that you also raised, which is quite important, is the quality of the pass. And you make reference to matric. More and more learners are graduating with bachelor's degrees, which means they are eligible to go to varsity. There's two issues there. One is that those that go through university still find it difficult to perform in the way that they manage to perform. The last time I checked, we were about 60% or so of the first years not going through at any university. You make an assessment that there is a quality pass, but that quality pass gets halted or does not progress beyond first year in most universities. What would you attribute that to? Because if the quality pass has improved to bachelor, the assumption that anybody can make or should make is that those students are ready to progress to university to a point where it's almost like a seamless type of environment.
You must remember you're raising the question of universities, and you are making mention of the first year of university where we seem to be experiencing maybe this also dropout levels, but also some of the learners not progressing to the second year. I think you must appreciate the fact that each time you arrive at a new environment, including yourself, you and I could also agree to that. You know, if you are not orientated properly, if you are not inducted properly, if you are not introduced properly to this new environment, many of us will struggle to make it. Because you must remember, for some of these learners, it will be for the first time they would have left maybe home to a new environment. Let's say I'm Ngosana Dolope from a far-flung rural area, not exposed to city life, not exposed to university life. It's rough. I mean, environment slightly different. From at school, when you have a teacher very close to you, who cares, guide you to an environment where you're almost, you are free, totally free. You do your own things. There's no real contact. The lecture, you only see the lecture at the class, and then thereafter it ends. So I'm saying maybe that new environment, we need to introduce our learners properly to that new environment, induct them properly to the new environment, but also create supportive kind of mechanisms that will be able to protect them such that they realize that, look, this is a new environment. These are the expectations of this new environment, such that they also psychosocial kind of support that we should be providing them. And I think if we can maybe apply some of these ideas, we should be able to retain our learners at the schools. But there are other factors as well that might not be things that are happening in the classroom that also influence behavior of children. And those mostly are things that get transported from our communities to our schooling and environment. So whereas we are trying to address the issues at the level of the school, we also need to address other contributory factors. And most of them are coming from outside the school that we also need to address. I had a conversation with somebody, I think, last week, to say that the mainstream school system, learners spend only 6 hours of the day at schools, which is a quarter of the day. And then they spend three quarters of the day in their communities outside the school. So our conversation was that in as much as we want the schools to be doing all these things to assist our learners to develop, progress, realize their true potentials, but there must be an appreciation of the three quarters of the days in the communities. What role the three quarters is playing for us to be able to retain our learners at school, but also assist them to progress as they move forward. So there needs to be that reconciliation between what is happening at schools and what our communities are doing to make sure that we succeed at the level of the schools.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom-line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision-making.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. I'm joined by Ngosana Dolope, who is the Deputy General Secretary at SATU. He's giving us shedding light on the complexity of the education fraternity, particularly from the perspective of the unions. Before we took that short break, Mr. Dolope, you made mention of psychosocial support that is needed to transition learners that came from high school to university so that they don't fail in those kind of quantums. And I think it's a fair point. But let's take a step back and look at Some of the challenges that are facing the teachers and extent to which the unions are addressing those particular issues. We know that, you know, bullying is such a major issue and it affects the quality of teaching. We know that the teenage pregnancy has become a norm in most particular schools. We have seen that lack of discipline amongst learners is skyrocketing. These are obviously issues that affect the quality of teaching and learning in school. How from a union point of view, how do you support your members to navigate those particular challenging environment? Learners are arriving late, being very disrespectful towards the teachers, and some frankly being very being bullish.
Yeah, it's very, very unfortunate. But also we move from the earlier point I made before we went to the break. We move from the point that says that education is a societal issue, the adage that says that it takes a village to educate a child. So our approach firstly is to say that we need to mobilize the entire society to attend to some of the social ills that you just referred to now, questions of bullying, questions of teenage pregnancy, lack of discipline, late arrivals, not doing schoolwork, disrespecting teachers, disrespecting your peers, your other learners at schools. So I think we have always been trying to mobilize society to address some of these issues, because some of them really are not only things that are related to what is happening in the schools. Some of them, like I said, get transported from the communities to our schools. Like, let's say, bullying, gangsterism, drug abuse, alcohol abuse. If you are in an environment in society that exposes our learners to some of these social ills, it's possible that these learners, when they come into the schools, will come with those wrong kind of values that they would have imbibed from our communities. So if our communities your role models are gangsters, drug lords, alcohol taverns are all over the place, abuse of alcohol. You're bound to have children who see those, to imbibe those as being the correct things to do. So wherever they go, whether they are in the church, whether they are at schools, they will always behave, or in most instances, they will behave like they would be behaving in our communities. That's why we are saying we need to address some of the issues that are coming from the communities with the hope that when we do address them in our communities, they might not be transported to our schools. Like violence, for instance, gender-based violence. It's something that is happening in our communities. I mean, some of these children, even at the level of home, are exposed to these unfortunate situations, gender-based violence, mother and father maybe not having a good kind of relationship. All of those do influence the learners that are coming into our schools. So whereas we are addressing them, we are trying to address them at school, but more effort, we should pay some attention to what is happening, like I said earlier, to the three quarters of the day. Because the three quarters of the day is where the learner spends most of his time, at home, in our communities, in the churches, and elsewhere. So they, the communities, will have to play a role. At home, we need to zoom in there and get to know what is happening there, what are these children exposed to, and address those social ills at the level of our communities, at the level of home, at the level of the churches, but also invite them, parents, to assist us to address these challenges. I mean, research will show that in all instances where learners are parents, are involved in the normal running of the schools, you minimize some of these social ills. I mean, when the parents are there, you have lesser challenges of ill discipline, you have lesser challenges of bullying, gangsterism, alcohol abuse, drug abuse. Because the parents are there, the school governing body is there, the community is involved. So we are able to arrest some of these things as a collective and not only as teachers. If that could be what we try to do by placing education as a societal issue, I think we should be able to work together as teachers and our communities and the parents. The churches also have an important role to play in terms of value systems and so on and so forth. And in the villages, also inviting traditional leaders, for instance, who also have some role to play in terms of making sure that we restore correct values in our communities, correct values in our schools and elsewhere. If we can balance those, I think we'll go a long way to do that. As fact, we have tried to do that. We have some campaigns of trying to reach school governing bodies. We do have relationships with them. We are participating in many stakeholder forums to try to talk to these things, but also influence policy to address some of these social challenges that are very, very disruptive in terms of how learning and teaching is taking place at schools.
You raise a very number of pertinent issues, which we'll just get back. I mean, the issues around corrective values are very important, because we would not have schools being vandalized if we had corrective values. We would not have the type of violence that we're seeing in schools between learners and among learners and between teachers and learners. So perhaps maybe after the break, you would give us a sense of what some of the campaigns that you are referring to and the extent to which these campaigns are making a difference in trying to alleviate issues around vandalism in school, in trying to alleviate violence between and among learners, and violence towards teachers. These are obviously big ticket items which inherently will affect the schooling. If the schooling is affected by these issues, the performance is likely to be low. So let's take a break and come back and get a sense from your end on the success nature and what else needs to be done to try and help the system to address these particular issues, particularly from the value perspective.
Did you know that most statistics for commercial and social research are tested for accuracy at a 95% confidence level? As specialists in the field, we do tests between 90 and 99% confidence levels. This is not to be confused with our name. Plus 94 is a celebration of the miracle post 94 in South Africa. We can still test the accuracy of your data at 94%. It is in our name to give you the confidence you need. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. I'm joined by Nkosi Mapelopi in his capacity as the Deputy General Secretary of SATU. Before we took that break, he was giving us a sense that the problems that we're seeing in schools emanate from immediate communities. Hence, it takes a village to educate the child. The implication is that if we mobilize resources, from the communities based on corrective values, we are unlikely to see the level of vandalism that is happening in school. We are likely to see violence, gangsterism, being addressed. We're likely to see learners who are more in tune with their core business, which is learning. But based on what you see in media, it looks like we are not winning this war. It looks like we are failing. And obviously, this is not the responsibilities of the unions, but unfortunately, these issues affect the schooling education, as it were. Kind of partners that you partner with, I'm sure the police are always there. How effective are these kind of interventions that you influence in trying to address some of these issues? And what are the implications from the moral point of view of teachers?
Look, what we have realized is that there are no silver bullets really to address these complex challenges. There are no ready-made kind of ideas to address these challenges. And also, they will express themselves in different forms from one province to the other one, from one school to the other one. So that's why, as such, we have adopted some campaigns. One of those campaigns is what we refer to as SATU Days, where on every Friday, the first Friday of every month, all our sites where we have members, we re-emphasize this importance of values in education, addressing the attitudes of our learners, but also trying to address our own members well, because teachers have always been role models in society. I mean, all of us, including yourself, remember, we always looked up to them. How they behave, how they speak, how they even work, will even want to behave like them. So during this Saturday, we trying to emphasize that campaign, that let schools be a conducive environment, safe havens. Let's make sure that we rid our schools of all these wrong things. Like I said earlier, alcohol abuse, gangsterism, weapons at our schools. So we emphasize those on these Saturdays. Like I'm saying, they're happening the first Friday of every month. So we are trying to do that, to inculcate this culture, trying to improve and introduce positive values at our school. So we are attending both to our teachers. We are saying you are role models. Can go a long way to address some of these things if you also behave in a proper kind of a way. Similarly, then we also introduce the learners to that campaign. That is the first campaign we have. There's another one that we have, which is also I'm a school fan campaign. This one, we've involved the entire society almost. We even working with some business, some companies that are supporting us. I mean, I can just cite now Old Mutual, for instance, as one of those institutions that we are working with around this I'm a school fan campaign, where we are trying to involve our community, school governing bodies, the police, like you said, social workers, the Department of Education. But in the main, like I'm saying, we want the society, the communities to be involved around this I'm a school fan campaign, where we are saying that the future of our country will come from the schools, and our schools must then be safe. Our schools must be, the environment must be conducive for learning and teaching. And therefore, we invite all the stakeholders, the police, to say that adopt a school kind of approach. Let there be a police that will be adopting a school, visit the school from time to time. Let there be a social worker who will adopt a school, who will from time to time visit the schools. Let the parents, again, be very closer to what is happening at schools. You know, the involvement of parents is very, very important. We can go a long, long way. I appreciate the fact that many of our parents are working. At times it's difficult for them to get involved. But if they can also try to get closer to what is happening in schools, I think we can go a long way to addressing some of these challenges there. And of course, the department must be able to also address these things there. But I don't want to belabor the point. I'm saying, in as much as we are addressing them at the level of the school, we need to pay attention to these things in our communities, the three quarters I'm speaking about. We need to make sure that the socio-economic conditions that are breeding some of these social ills are attended to. I mean, alcohol abuse. We need to, in our communities, have serious, serious campaigns. Maybe the churches need to play a more important role to assist us with this. So we need to address these things in our communities. And I think if we can address them in our communities, and I'm saying it's not a silver bullet, but it's an idea that we have as SADU. If we address them in our communities, we will have lesser of these problems in our schools. Remove, for instance, taverns. We have all of these streets in our communities almost have a tavern, some of them very close to schools. So when the learner gets out of the school, already he's exposed to a tavern, to a wrong environment, and so on and so forth. Attend to drug lords. You know, there are so many of them now in our communities, in the township in particular. So if we can rid our community of all these wrong things, I think our schools slowly but surely will become better institutions for learning and teaching. So we have these two major, major campaigns. The one is the SADU Days, and then the second one is the I'm a School Fan campaign that is dealing with all these distractions. I mean, it is so unfortunate that our communities will be marching in demand of a clinic, but they will come and destroy a school. It's a sick society. You can't have such a society.
You hit it in the nail, Mr. Dolopi, because this would have my next question. We have seen in so many instances about civil unrest or protest of sorts. One, learners are stopped from going to school, and the same rioters or people involved in a strike, they damage school property. What kind of a message is that? Is it, I mean, we have not seen quintile 4 and 5 parents don't go burn the buildings, they don't go burn the libraries that are very few, they don't destroy the very limited resources which they have. Where is this mentality coming from, and how can it be addressed?
To a large extent, though, that people will not want to accept this reality is that, you know, our unfortunate past, we've never really addressed to how we thought before 1994 we could address challenges. Because we, at that time, because we're fighting a system, we used to think violence should be employed to address or to reach out to that oppressive government before 1994. But I think our leaders, all of us post-1994, did not attend to that. To say to them, look, now, this is your government. These are your schools. These are your clinics. This is your community. These are your children. And therefore, you need to protect what belongs to you. This is your school. And also appreciate the fact that we have limited resources in our country. If you burn this school here, it will take years for government to come back and rebuild this school. So I think we have not really addressed to the methods we employed before 1994, post-1994, where we could employ other ways of still addressing our challenges. Let me just, before I allow you to continue with our discussion. You see, when our children are exposed to the use of violence as part of demand and trying to resolve a challenge, they might, you see, that's where it starts. The children get to know, oh, for me to get whatever I want, I must employ violence as a method or as a tactic to get attention of whoever may be in authority. So that's where it starts to be something that is wrong. And we must start there to say that let's employ other creative ways of getting attention of those in authority instead of just resorting to violence all the time. But also we must implore on those who are in government, who are in authority, to also address irritations of society, because some of these things are a response to cooperation by those in authority. Government must also do what it's supposed to be doing by providing society with those minimum resources, services, such that these irritations don't come up and then people then start addressing them. So there are a lot of things that we need to attend to. Government must come to the party and try to avoid all these irritations. If we can also lessen these irritations, because some of them are genuine demands by our communities, of course. They are genuine demands by our communities, but maybe we're just saying that we should try to employ better ways than always resorting to violence and exposing our children to a violent kind of environment.
Talking of violence, Mr. Dolopi, one of the issues which you're very much aware of is that of corporal punishment, because that in itself is an act of violence, because the teacher who is unable to communicate a particular message resulting to whipping, which is violence. To what extent, because we're reading in so many reports that some teachers do exercise corporal punishment, even though by law it has been banned. Your take on that?
You know, as part of our campaigns, both the IME School Fan campaign and the Saturdays, that's one thing that we are preaching, to say violence begets violence. You can't solve any problem through violence. I mean, research shows that many children drop out of the schooling system because of the violence and corporal punishment in schools, but also some of them become bullies as a result of the use of corporal punishment as an instrument or as a tool to discipline them. You can't discipline a child by exposing him to violence. So corporal punishment to us as a union is a no-no. We appreciate the difficult situation that some teachers find themselves in, but we still are saying that you don't use violence to be able to resolve your problems. Let's look at other creative ways to resolve them. Difficult to say this is the one that will work. This is the creative way that we must employ that will work. It's difficult to say. It will differ from one school to the other school. The extent of the ill discipline, the disrespect, the bullying from one school to the other one will determine the kind of response to them. But like I'm saying, let the parents get closer. I repeat this. Let our police also get closer to our schools. Let the social workers get closer to our schools. Because if we work on the mind all the time, on the attitudes all the time, because that's the other challenge that we have at our schools. Over time, we are focused only on knowledge and the skills part of our education system. And we have not really attended to the values and the attitudes of the learners. We only want past percentages, 80%, 90%. But then we have paid lesser attention to the values part of it, to the attitudes, to the behavior of our children. So I think we need to also emphasize skills, knowledge, but also emphasize values and attitudes, behavior of our children. It's not easy, it's complex, but we need to try to rid our schools of all the social ills.
I'm sure part of your campaign, I'm a Fan campaign, also deals with misconduct of teachers. We've heard in so many reports teachers behaving badly, you know, towards kids, you know, having, you know, a sexual relationship with kids, which defeats the point that you and I grew up in. We saw teachers as our parents. We respected teachers. What's your take on the teachers who value that particular custodianship principle, that they need to be there to protect those learners, not to sexual abuse them?
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. That's a very, very unfortunate situation. But I must also hasten to say, Nimrod, that we have good teachers in our country who remain good parents, who show love to these children, who teach them, take care of them. You know, they go out of their way to support the children to realize their true potential. You know, some of them use from the meager salaries that they are earning to support these children, even financially, buy them food, buy them shoes. Some of them even buy them training, whatever, sports, whatever resources for them to be able to participate in sports. So a fair majority of our teachers are good men and women who are dedicated to the cause of educating our children. Yes, indeed, we have this minority. Really, it is a minority, and I'm not undermining their contribution to deprofessionalizing the profession. There are very few of them who are tarnishing the good name of our profession. We are amongst those. In fact, recently, I think 2-3 years ago, we signed a collective agreement at the ALC in terms of how we think we need to attend to these people who are pretending, or so-called teachers, really, I mean, who they have sexual relations with our learners, some of them impregnating our children. We have said that we should be harsh as a system to attend to them, to a point that we are even agreeing with what criminal justice system is also saying, that they should be listed and be exposed to the entire society, that these are people who should not be close to our children. They can't work with our children. They should never be allowed to get closer to our children. We must get rid of them. We are happy that the South African Council of Educators is also really hard to attend to these ones. Many of them have lost their jobs, they've been deregistered, and they will never ever be employed as teachers in our country. Because, like I'm saying, they are tarnishing the good name of many, many, many good teachers who are working under very difficult conditions with little resources at our schools, teachers who are exposed to learners who come with all manner of challenges. Some of them are hungry and all. And these teachers are teaching them, but they are also supporting them. Like I'm just saying, these few, I just don't know how to label them, these few who are exposing us to this kind of attack by society ought to be attended to. They are attended to, including ourselves as a union. Some of them, some cases that we do get, we do discipline. And in fact, some instances, we even remove them. Remove their membership from our union. So we are really attending to this, because you are stealing from the future of our children, the girl child in particular. Because if you impregnate this learner, the possibility of this learner coming back is almost like it's so bad. We need to attend to and get rid of them.
Absolutely. On that note, let's take a quick break. We'll come back to thresh out the notion of professionalization of teachers, which is something that I'm sure is close to you and is close to the community, because if our teachers are more and more professional in their conduct, issues such as issues that you've raised are going to be minimized. Let's take a break. We'll break in a second.
We've weathered the unexpected. We've stepped into a new world. And now it is the time for our businesses to re-emerge. Sure-footed, clear-headed, and strategically on point. It is a time for greater certainty, for accurate, actionable market research and business intelligence to make effective, up-to-date decisions. South Africa, that is how we move our businesses and economy forward. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision-making.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. I'm joined by Mr. Dolopi, who is the Deputy General Secretary at SATU, and giving us his insights on some of the complex issues which are bedeviling schools from a union perspective. He gave us a sense of some of the campaigns that they embark on, one of them being SATU Day, the other one being I'm a School Fan campaign, which really rally around civil society, parents, churches, you name it, to try and instill corrective values to ensure that there's a minimum disruptions in school, because ultimately the performance of school is determined by the level of effort that comes from the community. If communities accelerate and inject sufficient values within the schools, the needle, performance needle is like to improve. As we proceed, Mr. Dolopi, one issue that you know is on a high is that of professionalizing teachers. I'm raising this issue in the context of other professions. CA, an example, they have their own accreditation bodies, and every other 2-3 years they have to go back and write some tests, attend particular conferences just to be abreast with the latest and latest technologies. And one gets a sense that teachers aren't subject to the same kind of accreditation, because once you've been a teacher, you can stay without reading, you can stay without attending courses or conferences and so on and so forth, in line with what you do. Tell us, what is the status of teachers from that particular end, and why is it that we're not behaving like a chartered accountant? We don't behave like medical fraternity insofar as instilling that discipline of acquainting oneself with the latest insights, technology, and so on and so forth.
If I could use your example of reading, for instance, teachers read every day. They must read every day because they must prepare for tomorrow, for the next day. Every day, teachers should show. So reading, studying, research is part of our work. You can't be doing your work if you don't do that. But let's come back to the question of the professionalization and the protection of the profession. We do have a council called the South African Council for Educators, SAES, that is regulating the profession with a clear code of ethics that also guides on what teachers should do, what they should not do. Like I said earlier, they are attending to questions of how teachers behave on a continuous basis. They have had road shows. I mean, they have gone to many, many provinces trying to also share with teachers the code of ethics. And what they are doing, mostly in the beginning of each year, they have these road shows of trying to reach out to the new teachers who are just coming into the system. I also know that they do go to universities as well. And I think they are attending to your 40-year students, those who are about to finish at university. So there is a lot of work that is being done by the Council for Educators to try to address the question of the profession, the ethics, introduce learners at the university level, and also start to register them even at the level of universities. To that extent as well, they recently, I think, introduced this credit kind of a program where teachers are expected to, over a period of time, accrue or to get credits up to a certain number of credits for them as part of their continuous development. So all of us, including myself, even though I'm not class-based at schools, but I'm also expected to produce these credits, these points rather. So whatever I'm doing, I should be able to be reporting to SAES to say that over this year, these are the programs that I was involved in, such that they didn't influence the points that are building up to me remaining teacher to be registered by SAES. So it's also happening not only in other professions, it's also happening in our profession, where SAES is administering and trying to regulate this point system that teachers must show that over the last year, this is what I've done, and then SAES then give you points of all the programs that you would have been involved on. So continuous professional development, it's a key part of the work of SAES, our professional body, but also ourselves as a union. Remember, we spoke earlier about these campaigns that we are having. If you look at the Saturday one, it emphasizes this question of professionalism. For instance, I will expose you to the main messages. I will share them with you, the main messages that we always carry on this Saturday, where we say, for instance, all teachers must prepare. We call on them. That is part of this campaign, that you can't be a teacher who does not prepare. So, and all teachers must be on time. That's what our message is on this Saturday, as a contribution to protecting the profession. So we say, you prepare, you are on time at school. When you arrive at school in the classroom, you must teach. That's what the Saturday is saying in protection of the profession. The Saturday says, you respect those in authority, the school management team, the school governing body. You respect them at school. And then there's the fourth message. This one of stop sexual victimization, harassment of learners. That's one of the messages of the Saturday. And then we also emphasize the question of corporal punishment, the meeting out of corporal punishment. To us, it's a no. Because we are dealing with cases all the time around corporal punishment. So you see, at the level of SACE as a council, but also ourselves as a union on this Saturday campaign, we are addressing the question of the profession. But it also goes to the employer as well. The employer also need to come, the Department of Education also need to make sure that professionalism is not only a question of me teaching, behaving properly, but also your conditions of work also should be attended to. Your salary that you are earning should be consistent to you being called a professional. And I'm saying your conditions of work and so on and so forth. So we are also trying to address those, to say that in as much as we want them to behave in this way, we are expecting of them to do the following things. Also attend to their salaries, attend to their conditions of work, make sure that the schools are properly resourced. So, I mean, you don't come as a teacher properly dressed, but there are no resources, for instance, at the school. So it does affect your work. So it's a combination of all of these things in the protection of the profession.
No, those are very good insights indeed. And to hear that SACE obviously is embarking on some program that seeks to strengthen the professionalization of the profession, and you know, credit bearing kind of courses are also very important, because that's how you as a teacher stay ahead of the curve, because you get exposed to the latest information, latest approaches, latest thinking, which enable you to become a better teacher. And in as much as other you know profession do that. But having said that, are you content that SACE and in terms of the work it does creates sufficient value for professionalization of teachers, or there's something missing that we can borrow from other profession to have teacher or teaching as a profession an ideal and respectable profession?
I think they are. I mean, they are really trying their best, but there will always be room for improvement. So I think to learn from other councils should be something that they are attending to make sure that we even strengthen what we already have. But I give them, I think they are doing well. For instance, for the fact that they start even at the level of universities to get to these learners and workshop them on what the profession is about. I think that's important. But also, just as part of induction, orientation, when the schools reopen in January, they are there again with them. They expose them to the profession, the ethics, and all those kind of things. So I'm saying I think they are trying their best under the circumstances with limited resources. And of course, like I'm saying, we can write off the possibility of learning from other institutions. Like this one of the credit bearing, I think they took it from some other councils, this issue of teachers should be subjected to some programs, continuous teacher development programs that are credit bearing for them to accumulate points such that they remain registered as qualified teachers in the profession. I think they should have learned this from other professions as well. So yeah, that's how I could respond to it.
Thank you very much. We're going to leave it to you. It's been absolutely beautiful getting your insight on some of the very complex issues that are bedeviling our education system. Giving your thoughts from a union perspective. Tolope, thank you very much for gracing Beyond Governance with your presence. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for inviting us. But just the parting one is the emphasis that education is a societal issue. It takes a village to educate our children. So we need to mobilize parents, the Department of Education, ourselves as the teacher unions, but business must also come to the party, because, I mean, they are the greatest beneficiaries, the real beneficiaries of our education system. So I think they need to release their resources, get money into our schools. We might be able to address many, many of the social challenges that we are having and then create this conducive environment for our learners. But thank you so much for inviting us.
Absolutely welcome indeed. We obviously put the shoulder to the wheel as well, because we fully understand the importance of galvanizing communities, yeah. All different structures, for me to change the attitude in the main. Exactly. If we change the attitude of our leaders towards school, we will not ban schools. We will not rape our kids. We will not destroy very basic properties that we have. We will safeguard those particular, and then obviously the sooner we remove those obstacles, the better for the teacher to focus on a core business. Unfortunately, we're going to leave it here. Certainly beautiful insight from your end. We will definitely call you again, for the number of issues that you've just barely touched on the surface, which would love to hear more and more from your end in the near future.
Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome. There with that, Sengosana Dolophi, who is the Deputy General Secretary at SATU, giving us a perspective on some of the challenges with the union his union is experiencing in particular, and the kind of proactive measures they're putting in place to try and alleviate all the challenges that affect schooling. I know we all are heading towards Easter holidays. I implore you to drive safely, be kind to yourself. Until we meet again, Shalom.
Beyond Governance was brought to you by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making. Did you know that most statistics for commercial and social research are tested for accuracy at a 95% confidence level? As specialists in the field, we do tests between 90 and 99% confidence levels. This is not to be confused with our name. Plus 94 is a celebration of the miracle post 94 in South Africa. We can still test the accuracy of your data at 94%. It is in our name to give you the confidence you need. Plus 94 Research. The science of decision making.